Welcome to Living Fullness, a podcast where you're invited to walk with two unusual friends through the ups and downs of the art of friendship. My name is Stina Constantine.
My name is Father Sean Burns. And together, we explore what it takes to grow real, satisfying friendships, the joys and challenges we face along the way, and of course, becoming a good friend ourselves.
We hope by sharing our learning and experiences, this podcast will serve you in living your life to the full. Welcome back to another episode of Living Fullness. We're really thrilled to have you guys here. Thank you so much for listening to our episodes on the podcast or on our YouTube.
Thank you.
How are you going today, Padre?
Well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good. Yeah, it has been a lovely day so far.
Kind of, yeah. It's been stormy.
Well, yes.
It's been stormy. You mean more than the weather.
Yes.
It's actually been a good day, qualitatively good day. Yeah, sure.
And look, there's nothing wrong with the storm as such either.
No. Our farmers are less than thrilled, I imagine.
That's true. With the amount of rain that we've had both down here and on this side of Australia as of late.
Yeah.
And then a bit of heat and then rain again and then a bit of heat and then rain again.
Yeah.
Farmers are definitely... They're a bit
in struggle street. Yeah. So pray for our farmers.
Definitely. In this episode, we wanted to do a little bit, something a little bit different. We have been working our way through the five key elements that's required for any relationship that's been stipulated by Sarah Swafford in the United States. And we've gone through four of those at this point. So we've talked about honesty, trust, time, and virtue. And we're about to get into the fifth one, God, in the next episode.
Yes.
So before we do that, we wanted to take an opportunity to really talk about our personal convictions. We thought that might be important and valuable so that anyone who's listening and watching has a bit of an understanding of where we come from.
In terms
of our personal convictions, a little bit about our story and the way that we see the world
before
we talk about God in the next episode.
Yeah, for sure.
So to do that, we have a list of questions that we're going to go through.
Yes.
We've pulled out seven questions that we thought might be interesting.
The complete number.
That we might go through. So we'll work our way through those questions. And if there are questions that come up for you regarding anything that we say in today's conversation, please send those questions in. We do have a Q&A. Episode coming up as well, and we want to make sure that we're answering those questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can be about, you know, what anything that we say here today in terms of our personal story and our testament and that kind of thing, or it can be about friendship, it can be our relationships, faith, spirituality, look, anything.
Whatever you've got, we'll answer it.
Yeah, we'll try.
We'll endeavour to answer
it. We will try.
Yeah.
And if we can't answer it, we'll try and point you in the direction of someone who might be able to.
That's right. We'll dob somebody else in.
In the nicest way possible.
That's right.
So question number one for you, Padre. What belief and values were you taught in your home, at school, and what was the culture like in your upbringing? Mm.
So I was brought up in a Christian setting. Mum and Dad were both Catholic, but when I was younger, Dad wasn't practicing his faith. Dad was a convert from the Church of Christ, which was sort of I suppose an evangelical Christian movement that isn't, they're still around, but I don't think they have the same presence that they used to have when Dad was a part of them, back in the 60s and 70s, I suppose. Mum always took us to Mass and taught us the faith, and Dad always professed belief in God, and he used to kneel beside us and say our prayers and that sort of thing, and he was really awesome that way, we were taught traditional Christian values in what was very much a traditional Australian home, in the sense that it was, you know, there was pretty well no other culture at play. Aside from the Australian background, Australian schooling, but Dad had a conversion at about 13, it was because a priest came around and started talking to him about cricket, and that was that was all that was needed.
Whoa!
So he was he had a conversion, and all of a sudden he was on fire with the faith and asking questions about it, and what was sort of standard for mum and myself and for Katrina, my sister, was sort of, it was like, wow, this is a whole new thing. And as a result of that, my brother, who also at that stage didn't practice, was kind of like, oh, wow, Dad's getting interested in the faith. I might start to get interested in the faith too. So it was it was a good Christian home, and both mum and dad taught us the importance of faith and the importance of family. Mm. But that in the hierarchy of goods, not that they taught the hierarchy of goods, sorry.
Not quite in that way.
Not quite that way, but in the sort of that God was first. Mm. God was always first. And that was something that mum really sort of hammered home. So that was sort of the home environments. In terms of schooling, it was a public primary school and a Catholic high school, and then a secular university and a Catholic seminary. Mm.
So a bit of a mix.
A bit of a mix. Mm. That's pretty much what formed my upbringing. Yeah.
Your early years.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. How about for yourself?
A little bit different to yours there, Padre. I also grew up in a Christian household. My parents both grew up believing in the Christian faith. That's the way that they brought up, and they were brought up, so they brought us up the same way. And I have vivid memories of, you know, Old Testament Bible stories being told to us as young children. So that immediately started creating an image of God in my mind and in my heart. My parents are very much devout Catholics. Mum has a very devout prayer life. She is always going through some form of prayer. She's always working through something with particular intentions. So I noticed and learnt the intentionality of prayer from her. But also with my dad, for example, he was very different in that in comparison to mum, in that he didn't verbalize a lot of his faith. We knew that he was Christian by his discipline that he had for his silent prayer life. So I have vivid memories, and even now when I go to visit, I always know when dad's praying, because he'll just go and say his prayers, and then he'll return to the rest of us. And you know, first thing of a morning, I know I'll walk out and I'll see a candle lit, and I know that's because dad's been there and he's said a prayer there before he's, you know, as he's lit a candle for the day. So he just does things very silently. But I learnt sort of from him that prayer life is a very personal thing too. So other than that, you know, and we did have weekly prayer as a family together, and we did go to church every Sunday, and I'd pick up a book in the back of the church and sit there and read that. You know, that's had some sort of a Bible story attached to it. So that was sort of my formation in that sense. But other than that, prayer and spiritual life was very much a private thing for us. So sure, that was sort of drilled into me. I also went to Sunday classes growing up. So that was where I learnt my faith.
Like Sunday school?
Yeah, yeah. So that was where I learnt my faith, was through our local church. And then when I moved countries, because this was back in Norway and I grew up in a Sri Lankan cultural household, so I had this Sri Lankan culture in the home, Norwegian culture outside the home and school and so on. Then moved out to Australia and had a different culture again. Some similarities with Norwegian, but different.
Sure.
And went to a Catholic primary school, Catholic high school, began going to youth groups and youth events that were attached to the church here. So I guess in that way there was a lot of cultural elements that played in to my upbringing, and some of them I've had to undo as an adult that I could only see in hindsight. So things like culturally with being from a Sri Lankan background, from a South Asian background actually, there's a lot of religions that play into that culture, predominantly Christianity, Buddhism, and Hinduism.
Sure.
So there's elements of the culture that actually stem from those religions, but because it's the melting pot of all of them, it's very hard to differentiate what belongs to which or has had influence from which religious faith. Sure. So one of the things I had to undo was things like reincarnation, for example. Okay, you know, that became... it's a normal part of conversation when it comes, conceptually, a normal part of conversation in South Asian backgrounds, whether that be dialogue with my immediate family or just with extended family and friends. There's that concept that lingers around. So that plays a part in a young person's mind and makes an imprint. So as an adult, I had to recognize that, oh, that's actually doesn't sit with my Christian values and beliefs. Yes. Oh, okay, I need to... need to relearn this and refigure that. So
I'll have to get you to come and speak to a non-Christian religions class at the seminar. that's actually very interesting. All right. Well, when did your personal relationship with Jesus begin?
Yeah, look, that's an interesting question because I don't actually have – I can't pinpoint when I first began dialogue with God. I feel like there's always been a conversation happening for as long as I can remember of conversing with a higher being, with God. But I do have memories of about 9 or 10 years of age becoming aware that Jesus wasn't just a character in a story, that he was an actual person that I could and should be in relationship with because he wants to be in relationship with me.
Sure.
So that was probably the age bracket that I started to recognize that.
Okay, cool. And as a follow-up, what was your first impression of him as a person?
I think he was friendly. And I alluded to this before because I had understandings of who God was through the Old Testament. I'd sort of formed certain stories in my head of what God is like, and having this person who is compassionate and loving and loves children, and there was such a joy and gentleness and compassion surrounding Christ that I think my impression of him was just that he was loving, and in my child mind I also understood that if God is our father and I'm his child and Jesus is his son, well, then Jesus is my big brother.
Sure.
You know, that was sort of how I also identified with him. Yeah. Nice. So what about you, Padre? When would you say you first began a personal relationship with Jesus?
Similarly, I couldn't put a moment on it because Mum had sort of brought us up with faith. Jesus was always someone to me, you know, he was always someone that was in my life in one way or the other. I have vivid memories of Mum and Dad kneeling down and saying bedtime prayers with me. You know, that's something that sticks with me. We would pray grace always before meals. That grace was, Father God, bless the hands that have prepared this food. And I used to say repaired this food.
Because
I couldn't get my tongue around the P. And Mum wasn't too happy with that as a grace. But whoops. At any rate, bless the hands that have prepared this food and make us truly grateful for what we're about to receive. I remember just Father God, like that was something that stuck in my brain as an image of him, was, you know, we call him Father, and so he must be something like my own dad. So that was it was an image that I had from him from very, very early age. It was a fatherly image. And so in terms of a first impression, was that he, similarly to yourself, he was like a family member because he was invited to every thing that we did. He was invited at meals when we prayed grace. He was asked to watch over us as we sleep. You know, he was someone that we spoke to when we first rose in the morning. You know, he was like another member of the family who was always there.
That's really sweet. What about over time, Padre? Has it changed?
Yes.
Okay. How has it changed? Let's ask the obvious question.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to get out of it just by like a one-word answer. Throughout my life, there's been a period of growth and regression, you know, and in both, I see God's goodness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that he willed regression, but he's worked greater good as a result of whatever regressions occurred due to my inability to respond to his grace. In my early school years, I grew in knowledge of the faith. Mum was a scripture teacher, so you know she taught us all about religion, all about the faith, and there's one thing I do remember. I went to Mum one day and asked her, "Mum, if God the Father is Jesus' dad, and if Mary is his mum, why aren't they married?" So Mum sat me down and she began to explain to me the ineffable mystery of the incarnation. And apparently I was very restless and I was like, yeah, okay, that's awesome. Can I go and play now, please? And Mum said, no, I want you to repeat back to me what I just said. And my response was, Mary is God the Father's ex-wife. And...
oh, no.
To which my mother replied, boy, you will have me excommunicated. Sit down and listen. So I got it in the end. Didn't understand it, but I got the formula in the end.
Do you understand it now?
I don't think any of us fully understand it, but we can express it. How's that? That was classic. Was that if I had questions, I could go and ask Mum, and Mum had answers, and so that's how my faith grew in my early years, just through that instruction. And in high school, you kind of, if you hold fast to any religious experience in high school, and there may be some of you who can relate to this, generally you wind up becoming known as the religious kid, which is not, you know, it's not great for one's popularity at times. No. Mind you, if there are any religious kids listening at the moment and you're enduring some kind of hardship because of it, can I encourage you to carry on with your religious fervor? Because in the end, those who are... being painful to deal with, they will come to have great respect for you in the end, and you know it's worthwhile sticking it out because you'll wind up being an excellent example. So stick out with it, and also you know God's bigger than any of that. So don't lose hope. But you kind of get known as the religious kid. And so while I didn't lose my faith over my high school years, I kind of figured out that, yeah, okay, look, it's better for me to hide this. It's better for me to not have this as something that I am, you know, really visibly engaged in. And that attitude followed me from high school to university, and I wound up getting a at university. I wound up sort of encountering a fellow from Christian Fellowship, Holy Christian Fellowship, if you're watching, Christian Fellowship at the Wagga campus. This fellow began to tell me why my Catholic faith was wrong, and with a last name like Burns, I'm Irish enough to be like, well, no. No, I'm Catholic, and this is not. I'm not taking this line down. No, so I investigated. I started to find out more and more about my faith and deepen what knowledge I had, and that started to sort of enliven that faith again. Yet, oddly enough, at the same time, I was becoming very self-involved, and. Now, the Lord, through his faithful people, helped me out of that and led me to recognize and to strive to be a son of God. And I've been able to see God through the sort of the dark scars of my life, particularly you know, as I've come out of university and felt that sort of that call to priestly life in my years through the seminary, you know, those years in late university and seminary years were huge moments of growth in faith, unlike I'd never really gone through, and helped me to contextualize what scars that I'd picked up through high school and university in the context of the gospel. Yeah.
Wow.
What about for yourself?
Look, it's definitely grown over the period of my lifespan so far. Definitely grown and developed. And I've, you know, that initial relationship of Christ being like a brother to me also grew over time. I grew to see him as my Lord and my Savior and the King of the universe, and then to just fall in love with him and just then become like a friend, like a really solid, good friend. So it's grown over that time. But I guess there have been some challenges along the way that were definitely difficult, but in hindsight have gotten me to where I am now. And some of those, I don't have a background story of a long period of time where I was contemplating if God existed. I don't have that, because from very early years I was an outdoorsy kid. I was always sort of out in nature. I was fascinated by just creation in general, and anything that I saw and could touch and could feel, they marveled me. They were just amazing. And as a student, I was a bit of a science nerd. So everything that I was learning just seemed to keep coming back to this perfect balance. There was just something about, you know, the axis of the earth and the distance from the earth to the sun. Like it had to be perfect for us to be where we are today. And the human body fascinates me. It's an absolute masterpiece with the number of systems that are involved in order for us to simply be a human body. Those things work intricately together, each system works as a complete on its own, but it works with each other as well. And so I kept seeing that pattern, if you like, across all of creation with everything. And I just couldn't buy that, oh, that was an accident. How many accidents can you have in a row like that? I've never been able to comprehend. I've always been able to see that this thing, all of creation, has a design to it. And if it has a design, it has a designer or an architect or a creator. So I've never gone through a significant period of my life where I've contemplated whether God existed or not. It's just always been, I see the world around me and I know that God exists. The question for me was, given that, do I want him or do I reject him? That was probably my challenge. And along with that, if I wasn't to reject him, do I choose my faith? Yep. Those are my two big challenges. And as I grew, a lot of my friends left the faith. They either just ceased practicing the faith or ceased practicing their faith and then stopped believing. And seeing that did make me feel very much alone. I found myself not having community around me anymore. And that was hard. It was really hard to go through, especially during university years. It's really hard to grapple with all the messages that are around you that the world wants to tell you when you don't have a group of people to journey this thing with. So that was really, really difficult. And so I guess for me, there was a point where I decided, after watching a really good friend start to get involved with a different faith, I started to question whether I could do that, whether I was capable of leaving the faith that I grew up in for another. And I decided then that the only way I could do that is if I could reject this faith. And the only way I could reject this faith was to first get to know it. And I didn't know it well enough to be able to reject it. So I started exploring. And as I started exploring, I found answers and then questions I'd never thought about before, like, who thought of these questions? These questions are brilliant. And then they were answers to those questions. So I actually started to learn more about my faith and become more involved in it and didn't really want to leave practicing my faith.
Cool.
So that was sort of a reason not to leave it. But it's a different question as to whether you actually embrace it then.
Because
it's one thing to say, well, I'm not going to leave what I know and what I now understand. It's another to say, well, now it's mine. So that in itself was also a challenge to have to go through. But a lot of youth initiatives that were around me were really helpful in giving me that community, even if it didn't eventuate in close friendships or anything. At least there was a group of people that I could see, and in the witnessing of other people's faith, I knew that I wasn't alone in this.
Yeah.
Even if they were all sorts of different ages, they weren't my age bracket, they weren't really, you know, we're heading in the same direction that I was heading in, just seeing somebody else go through that was helpful. And of course, I had my own personal experiences at youth events as well that left an unshakable mark in me that there is something much deeper going on here that I'm yet to understand.
And to think you and I were present at many of those youth events.
Right?
Yes. Because, I mean, grew up in the same diocese, essentially. You know, we were present at many of those same youth events. In fact, my sister, hi Katrina.
Hello.
my sister organised the first Youth 2000, which happened in, well, I feel like it's self-explanatory now, but I have to say it, it happened in the year 2000. Yep. You were there at that. And I was there at that. Mm. I was dragged along because I was, you know.
You didn't want to be there.
I was the organizer's little brother. So
right.
So
we sat in the same talks together.
The same talks, exactly. Exactly, there you go.
We probably had, you know, those small groups together.
Yeah, that's right.
Just didn't.
No idea.
No. God's funny like that with his timing.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Stina, what does your faith look like now?
Yeah, sure. So I guess now I consider my faith a treasure, really. It's mine, it's a gift, and it's something I really value and definitely would not be willing to let go of. But I also know that I have a past that I'm not, you know, all that crash hot about. But at the same time, It's a funny thing, regret. You know, on the one hand, you sort of want to be able to go back and rewrite it if you could. But on the other, I see so much good that God's brought through it. I kind of don't want to change anything, even though there were moments where I turned from him. I made choices that were not great. I chose things that were not him. And, you know, I contemplated leaving for another faith, right? These were all things that aren't so crash hot, but it was through those things that he's brought me to where I am now, and I would not trade in where I am now for anything. Mm. And I know I have a long way to go, but I still would not trade this in. Yeah. And it's not because I'm in this, oh, perfect state of everything is easy in my faith now. Forget it. I have challenges every single day. I make mistakes. I make poor choices. I face challenges and opportunities every single day. Opportunities to love people, and opportunities where I go, it'd be easier and I'm going to choose the more comfortable path, right? Do it every single day. But even still, I'm learning to just lean into abiding with God and to strive to love Jesus the best that I can. And my prayer at the moment is just to love him one drop more than the previous day, so that one day, maybe my cup would be overflowing with love for him, and through him, I might be able to love the world. So, you know, that's where my faith is at right now.
Pretty awesome. Yeah.
What about you, Padre? What does things look like for you now?
I couldn't imagine life without God. Like, it's just it's an unimaginable black pit of despair to even consider it. You know, I speak to him and he speaks to me. I'm not hearing voices frequently in my head as such. But in my heart. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's and it makes a difference. Like it you know, as you said, we you know, we mess up every day, and you know, we fall short of the mark that God has set for us. But you know, consistently, there is God's mercy, and there is God constantly just being like, okay, you know, Sean, you've messed up. Up we get. Come on, go on. This is where I want you to be. Come with me now, please. You know, he's just faithful. Mm. You know, and I get to experience that fidelity every day. And so that I'm now not just struggling against sin in order to get a reward or in order to avoid some kind of punishment. I actually want to grow in love with God, and that's kind of awesome. And I suppose I think I've become more keenly aware of just how awesome his sacrifice is, and part of that comes from prayer, but it also comes from the example of my family and friends who demonstrate the love of God, who sort of image his love in their acts of service. And sort of when you see that love on display, you sort of, you kind of realize how much more incredible the love of God is, and yet you're sort of astounded by the love and service of people around you. How much more astounding is then the love of God? So, yeah, it's I wouldn't be anywhere else. I wouldn't be anywhere else, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Another question.
Mm.
What season of life are you in now?
Summer. Sorry.
What season of the year?
Sorry.
What season of life are you in now, and what is God calling you into at this time?
Okay, so I'm a priest, in case, obviously I feel like everyone kind of gets that now.
Well, for those watching on YouTube.
So I'm a priest, I'm a professor engaged at a seminary in priestly formation, and right now it's an extraordinarily fruitful time. You know, I'm seeing God's miracles at work in the young men that he's called me to serve at this time. And I also am at this moment being called to trust God more. I mean, I know that my time here at the seminary as a full-time formator is coming to an end, and there is an uncertainty about what sits after that. And so I get that, you know, great sense to trust God. Trusting that he'll give me the challenge that I need, and he'll give me whatever it is that whatever cross it is that he knows that should be mine. And he's also called me to serve in ways that I wouldn't have ever dreamed of. You know, when I was ordained, academic pursuits were very, very far from my mind, and it was not a way that I saw as being able to serve the people of God. So when I was asked to do further study, I wasn't just a bit fearful, I was also a little bit confused, sort of, you know, but why? You know, why would you do that? Why? I'm a priest now, I'm ordained, Lord. Get me out there and get me involved in you know, the parish stuff. Why are we taking more study? You know, this is ridiculous. I did 7 years of it. Let it go, man. But to see how God has led me down a road that I would not have otherwise walked down has been absolutely incredible. And to watch what good things he can work when you're willing to cooperate just this much, you know, he can provide for so much good things to happen. That's been pretty awesome. Yeah. Yeah. How about for yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a single woman, and just to clarify, I'm really happy. there's an attitude out there that once you hit a certain age in your mid-20s or whatever and you remain single, that people need to throw you a pity party.
Right.
You do not. I live a very, very joyful, joy-filled life. I'm very content with where God has me right now. Mm-hmm. And so all I'm really trying to do at this point is just focus on living each day to the best of my ability. So everything from the people that I meet to the way that I try to love them in that moment, to the clients that I serve, the work that I do, the ministry that I do, you know, everything with as much love as I possibly can, and just do it to the best that I can in the day that I have been given, fully knowing that there will be days where I don't have as much energy as other days. But if I've given it all I can for that day, then that is a day well served. So that is how I'm trying to do things. But God also has brought me through a lot of, as a friend of mine likes to put it, trust exercises. And those have changed, and he continues to pull me deeper and deeper into trust with him. And that is only natural when you're growing in relationship, as we've talked about. And so I guess my relationship with him has gone from having trust exercises where he's said, all right, close your eyes and fall backwards, I'll catch you in my arms, to saying, all right, here's a mountain I want you to climb without a harness. Like, okay, sure, we can do that, right? You're with me? Yeah, no worries, we can do that. And, you know, then he's also gotten me to a point now where it's, okay, you're at the top of this mountain now, wonderful. I want you to go over to that mountain over there. I'm putting a tightrope in between. And here's a balancing beam. Actually, no, forget the balancing beam. You won't need it. Right. Yeah, don't worry about the storm around you. Don't worry about the winds. It's fine. I've got you. Right. No worries. So it's trying to, you know, he's pushing me, and but, you know, in the most loving way possible. He's there, and he is not going to let me fall. I'm not going to budge. All I need to do is put one foot in front of the other and keep my eyes locked on him. So I'm learning that lesson of Peter, really, just keeping my eyes fixed on Christ, and forget the storms, forget that there's water, forget that there's no platform between you and him. Just keep your eyes fixed on Christ. King of the universe, everything obeys him. Like, who cares about consequences and circumstances and situations, you know? None of it matters. So he's just pulling me deeper and deeper into that.
Narrow is the righteous path, eh?
And scary, apparently.
And scary at times too, yeah, sure.
No, yeah. He's got it. So it's that's
really,
all that
really beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah. So why does this matter to you?
Yeah. I guess because for me personally, I feel as though I've found a way that doesn't just bring me happiness and doesn't just suit me, but it actually frees me to be who I am and who I was made to be. And so even if I was to put aside, or not put aside, but even if we were to talk about it in the sense of non-spiritually and non-religiously, you know, if we were to talk about things just pure behaviorally, then we can see that a lot of our world's problems and sufferings and pains comes from a lack of true freedom, either because we ourselves aren't capable of making, or aren't able in the moment of making, the most freeing decision, and so therefore we harm ourselves, or we make poor decisions that we regret, or we hurt other people, or because we're facing consequences of other people having made decisions that weren't decisions that they made when they were truly and most free. And so when I say that, I'm talking about vices. These are the things that really chain us, and they're the things that don't allow us to make the most freeing and most loving choice. And so the opposite to that being virtue. And so having found that, then looking at, well, where do I find the pinnacle of virtue that isn't just about making a physical choice or a certain behavior, acting in a certain way, but an actual integration of thoughts, feelings, emotions, desire, passion, you know, to your behavior, to why you want to do it, your intentions, all of that, body, mind, and soul, the only place I can find that is in Christ. So now that I've found the way, being Christ, I would be entirely selfish if I tried to keep that to myself. So that is why this stuff matters to me.
Seminarians watching, take note. It's very good. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Why does this matter to you, Padre?
When this question was posed, I thought of a encounter that I had with an old girlfriend that I'd met since being ordained a priest. I just happened to run into her. And her first words to me when she saw me were, "Sean? Hi. Why are you dressed like a priest?" "Because I am one." and you know, we had this you know, conversation about, you know, sort of what happened in between the sort of, you know, our split to then all of a sudden now, because we really hadn't seen each other between then and now. What kind of happened to, you know, make it that you're now wearing a Roman collar? Like, what has gone on here? And so I explained that I felt that God had called me to give my life to Him in this way, and that you know, I probably wasn't the very best self that I could be when I was around her, but that I you know, change had occurred, and that that was by the grace of God. And her response was stiflingly dreadful, not due to her fault at all. It was very simply, "Well, whatever makes you happy." You know, whatever makes you happy. And I can't tell you how much that response just drains me. You know, whatever makes you happy. It's as though the thing that, like, there is only one thing in this world that can actually make us happy, and that is God. You know, there's only one love that's going to actually satisfy our human longings, and that's God. Because everything else that we search for happiness, it never delivers. You know, it never actually makes us happy. It promises happiness. It delivers some kind of fleeting happiness for a small period or window of time, but then that dissipates, and I'm left empty. Mm. You know, and so whatever makes you happy, no, not whatever. Not whatever, God. God makes us happy. In my formation as a in my first year of the seminary, we had this awesome first year formator. His name was Father Scott Armstrong. Hello, Father Armstrong. I don't know. You're probably not watching, but if you are, hi.
Or listening.
And or listening, hi. Father Armstrong, you know, took us through a document called Pastores Dabo Vobis, which is a Latin phrase which means "I will give you shepherds" from the prophet Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And it's written by John Paul II, and there's this phrase from John Paul II, which is that he says that many young people today are prisoners of the fleeting moment. And
so good.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and this is what we have. I feel as a culture we've become is a prisoners of the fleeting moment. You know, going from one intense experience of gratification to the other, looking for some kind of happiness, but never really finding anything of value. Mm. And I, having found the love that satisfies, I want to share that.
Yeah. Definitely. An interesting question for you. Mm. What if, you know, this whole thing, what if you're wrong?
Yeah, good question. Two things. The first is that I'd propose to anybody who asks me the question, what if I'm wrong, I'd propose Pascal's wager. That's mm-hmm. the first thing. Mm-hmm. So Pascal's wager is, Blaise Pascal was a mathematician, I say that like somebody who likes maths, but we both know that's not true. you know, he was a mathematician, very clever man, but he was also a Christian. And to his atheist friends, he would put a wager in front of them. And he would say, if I am wrong, I have nothing to lose. You know, I, I, I will die, I will go into the ground, I will be worm food, but I will have lived a full life and I'll have lived a happy life. If you, on the other hand, are wrong, you, my friend, have everything to lose. His point, his end point is you will have led a miserable life only to have been led into a deeper misery. So I think that's actually worthwhile considering is Pascal's wager. The Christian has nothing to lose in a certain sense. But I think more impressive than Pascal's wager is the relational reality of Christianity. It's not just some ideology that we profess. It's actually a relationship which we experience. And so I'm actually very happy to say to somebody who says, what if you're wrong? I'm most happy to say, I'm not. I'm not wrong. Not only because reason dictates that there must be a God, and not only because historical circumstances and realities point to the fact that Jesus Christ was actually divine, but also because I experience, and more importantly, because I experience the joy and the love of Christ in the context of a relationship. And let me tell you, that makes all the difference for life. So I encourage anybody who has questions about the existence of God and all of these things, look, shoot us questions through the podcast page, or I am on Facebook, so PM me. PM.
Private message, no private worries.
PM.
Good one.
Prime Meridian. No. get in touch and ask. And if there are any questions that you've got, I'm more than happy to answer them. And if I can't answer them, I'll find someone who can.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you?
Yeah, I guess for me, when I hear this question, what if you're wrong? I think often for me, it's almost like this idea of belonging to a religion or having a spirituality is like a preference. It's like a choice you make. And the way I think of it is like, oh, well, it's a choice between a brownie and a cupcake. Like, which one do you want? They're both the same. You can choose to be part of this religious belief or not believe. Or you choose between this one and this one and this one. Like, it's, do you want a chocolate brownie or do you want a vanilla brownie? Like, it's not the same. The question doesn't actually fit very well at all, because at the end of the day, look, if you ask me if I want a cupcake or a brownie, I'm going to tell you I want both. So it's not, the question doesn't fit because it's not about a preference. And we've talked about this before in the way that we view the world and in terms of what you've said already historically, and reason and logic and all of those things play into this in that. But also exactly as you said in terms of relationship, for me it's like asking a spouse, do you think your spouse loves you? What if you're wrong? Hang on, what? Like, that makes no sense. What do you mean, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
I know my spouse loves me because of all of these things that have been said and all of these things that have been done and the continuous dialogue that continues to happen to this day. Well, that is exactly what it is like to be in relationship with Christ. It's exactly that. There have been things that God has said. There have been things that God has done to prove that he loves me. So to ask the question, it just makes no sense. Yep. Makes absolutely no sense.
That's a very good answer. I like that one. Yeah? Yeah. Awesome.
Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast.
Yeah, right. Very good. Okay.
That was right. Deep on very different kinds of levels.
It was.
We haven't done a podcast like this.
No, it's a bit different. It's a bit sort of self-revelatory.
Yeah. So as I said before, if there are questions, please let us know. You can jump over to Living Fullness Facebook group, drop your questions in there, or you can private message, DM us, depending on whether you're on Facebook or on Instagram. Look up Virtue Ministry. You can put your questions in there. Or if you know us personally, make contact with us and let us know what your thoughts, comments, questions are. Also leave them under the YouTube video if you're watching on YouTube as well.
What is a DM?
Direct message. Oh.
I'm not that old. Like, I'm not, I don't know these things, man.
That's okay.
I feel like it's yeah.
That's
DM
okay.
DM me. What are they doing?
They're direct messaging.
When I was a boy back in 1925, we didn't have any of these direct messages you're talking about. Sorry.
Oh, you just have mail and pigeon, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So, as always, though, truth, beauty, and goodness.
Truth, beauty, and goodness. Very good.
This is the end of our podcast episodes. Would you like to go first, Padre?
After you.
Of course. My truth, beauty, and goodness. I've had so many. It was actually hard to pick one this week, but I had the pleasure of meeting a lovely young lady who's moved in to Wagga several months ago, pre-COVID now, and her little bub. And we were introduced through a mutual friend. And so I caught up with this lady who was sitting in a coffee shop chatting away. And as we were talking, you know, she just casually said, oh, yeah, you know, I'm caring for a three-month-old and I'm working from home, teaching from home. And, you know, I'm also doing my PhD. And, oh, okay, that's interesting. What are you doing your PhD in? Anyway, she proceeded to talk about, you know, virtue and that it's more than behavior and that it's about, you know, our desires, and her particular focus is around the imagination component, which I was entirely fascinated by. So for a good, I think probably 5 to 10 minutes, my jaw was on the floor. I was that idiot that just sat there in complete awe, but just dumbfounded at the way that that she was viewing, taking, you know, the perspective that she was taking on virtue and where she wanted to develop it, which was absolutely fascinating. So that to me just put like a whole dose of inspiration into me.
It's awesome.
It was absolutely fascinating. And she was gracious enough to be able to say afterwards that, you know, if there's anything I can do to help in terms of material or resources, and please get in touch. So awesome. I felt like, wow, I've just been connected with this powerhouse.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So cool. So cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Padre?
For me, it's a new friend of mine who has had to make a really big decision, and you know, it's sort of a decision of kind of epic proportions in a way of uprooting oneself and going into a completely different direction in life, and the manner in which he has done that is really rather heroic, and so I've you know, he's it's beautiful to see, but it also shows just that you know, it's both the goodness of God at play, you know, and the truth that he was able to see in that situation, that God isn't, you know, he's not going to abandon me here, he's not going to just let me fall down. If he has orchestrated this, if he wants this to happen, then it's going to happen in the best possible way, and it's going to happen for my good and for the good of others. So why waste time worrying? Why don't just do it?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Well, that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode. Make sure you get in contact with your thoughts, comments, any questions that you might have. Let us know too if there is anyone out there who is a business owner or has, you know, valuable resources and things you'd like to share and would like to be a sponsor of the podcast.
Please,
you know,
do, yeah.
Get in touch. Yeah. We'd love to be able to work with you and be in partnership with you. So get in touch for that too. You can do that through our website, virtueministry.org.au. And yeah, that would be awesome. But until next time, more of our love and praise.
Bye.